Yo, what's up? It's your girl DJ Narc. I recorded a little bit, lost my train of thought, went back to listen to it and realized that I sounded like I was a million miles away, so let's try this again. So, as I was saying, I'm in New York. If you have it, smoke it. Does that work? Let's do that together, shall we? And let's talk about all the things. Good Lord, there is so much to speak about. But I guess we should start once again with, did you miss me? Where the fuck have you been? Maybe I've talked about it before, but there is a book called The Bonobo and the Atheist, in which they explain that in primate culture, when an alpha is hurt, they retreat into the forest deep. So even these other really smart monkeys related to them can't find them. And they go and hide there while they heal, because they understand that primacy and this, the alpha energy is of course based on physicality, but it's also, it's a mindset. It's a mindset within you and within the people around you. So many times we find it very difficult to show our vulnerabilities for that same reason, because we have this coding within us that this is a more successful behavior when it comes to living within a group. That if you get hurt, you don't want anyone to see you bleed. But it's primal. It's done on this very deep level. You're not trying to do it. You're not consciously aware of it, but you do know that when you're sick, you don't like having people around, and you don't really like to talk about it, and you know, you just kind of, you're a quiet healer, let's say. So that's my excuse. I don't have one, is what I mean. It's never intentional to go into the shell. And every Cancer out there is nodding their head. It's never intentional to go into the shell. It's never by choice. It's by feeling. Asking a Cancer rising, Cancer moon, why they go into their shell is like trying to get some sort of an explanation from the moon. Why we can only see certain parts of it when we're rolling around in space. The moon's like, okay, I'm not doing anything. Literally, I'm here. It's your vibes. Yeah. So I'm in the car, okay, and we had just come back from buying Baba a bicycle, and it was raining lightly, but it had been raining lightly all day, and I'm on a road I've driven down every day for 4 or 5 months at that point. And for some reason, I go around this turn and the car just turns a little too much. And so I turn the wheel to correct it. And when I turn the wheel to correct it, the car skids and goes sideways on the highway. And then before I can even process that, it's barreling off the road down a very steep embankment toward a bunch of cows, actually. And these pine trees. And so now from here, I can only tell you what I remember. And I have, since I'm glad I haven't, I mean, I've told you about it, I guess, on the lives. Please drink something. I think I've told you about it on the lives. But I know more now because I know what happened to my brain. So the story is more complete. Well, I'll tell you what I remember. The car barrels down the embankment because this happened so fast that I don't think I had a chance to take my foot off the accelerator. But maybe I did. I don't remember. Anyway, I remember the car hitting a tree, and I was going about 70. Yeah. And I thought, well, it didn't make sense to me, but the next thing I saw was that the airbags were all out and busted, and there was this black smoke coming out of them. But there seemed to be a lot more damage to the car than just the engine hitting the tree, which I didn't really understand, but I also didn't realize that I had passed out and woken back up. So I opened my eyes, I realize now. See, because this is the train of events I remember, it didn't make sense to me why I didn't remember the airbag coming out, right, or popping or anything. None of that, like, there was all this glass, but I didn't remember any glass breaking. Like, there were all these things that didn't make sense, but my vision seemed to flow from one event to the other as if it was continuous. So I didn't realize that I had passed out and woken back up. I should have. But I remember the car hitting the tree, and then the airbags were all out, and there was glass everywhere, and there was this black smoke coming out of the airbags, and my leg hurt really bad, and my entire chest was caved in. So it was very hard to breathe. And when I saw the black smoke, for some reason I thought of like a James Bond movie. Like, James Bond movies, cars always blow up, and I guess that's a very, very early reference for me. It's really interesting to be put in such a dangerous situation that's so uncertain, because I don't think you ever really know even yourself what you're made of, because you haven't been tested in a way that would make you have to go on instinct. Your conscious mind is always, you know, directing the show, no matter if you want it to or not. But then these things happen that shock the conscious mind to the point where it debilitates it, and it has no options. It doesn't know what to do. And this much deeper, much stronger, much more directed and intelligent, but decisive, you know, determined part of you takes over. It doesn't have any doubts. And I try to live in that space, but I can always feel it when I slip out of that space. But in that way, it was an incredible experience to have. Wow, where I hit my head is now tingling when I'm talking about this. That's really interesting. But it was a really great way to get back to that place, to that primal place. Anyway, when I open my eyes, or well, what I know now is when I open my eyes and I saw the airbags, blah, 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 I thought the car was going to blow up, and I realized I could feel that it was tilting towards my side, so that the door, I wouldn't be able to get out of the car that way. So I jumped out. I opened the door and I jumped out of the car as it was tipping over, and I ran. and I ran up the embankment. And funnily enough, for about 2 weeks beforehand, you know how I like to go through looks? You know how I am. I like to basically, like, costume it up. Like, I just like costumes, I guess. I like fashion, but I like it a bit almost too appropriate. I like very, like, archetypal fashion. I know we've talked about this, but, like, my newest thing right now is, like, it's fall soon. So it's got to be trenches and boots, you know? An interesting skin on the boot, an interesting color on the trench. Give me, like, a subtle copper shimmery eye, right? A little bit of a smudged liner. Come on with it, you know? A little bounce in the hair, right? A little bit of a cut in the hair to make it, like, a little shorter, a little bouncier. Like, come on. Come on. I like it to be so appropriate that you're like, bitch, yes. Like, look at the look. Like, the look is classic. She's, you know, she's appropriate. She's archetypal. Like, don't fuck with that bitch. She's archetypal. Listen, you're not going to catch me on a boat with that and not be wearing stripes. Okay? That's actually so true. I was just cleaning out my closet yesterday and, like, just, like, overhauling. And I realized that I have, like, 6 blue and white striped shirts. And I love them all. They're all absolutely perfect. Anyway. Please drink something. Please smoke something if you have it. I should have rolled another joint. I might pause you and go roll another joint after this one. Ew. Okay. So. Where were we? We were talking about... Right. So for 2 weeks, I had been going through this thing where I wanted, you know, it was going through one of my archetypal fashion moments. And I was like, I'm so, like, into just, like, Sopranos. I'm going to watch Sopranos this week. Maybe I'll start this week. And then I found some sweatsuits that were very 90s. And they reminded me very much of Soprano. And one of the ones that I found that was, like, a rose mauve color. And I was, like, in love. And I was like, absolutely, Sopranos. So I'm walking around for like 3 weeks perfecting this look, right? So I finally feel the day that we go to get his bike, like I've really perfected this look. Like it is fire. Because one of my, the thing about archetypal fashion is, it's like, if you go somewhere, people are going to see you and they're going to register that it is a motherfucking look. But they can't really put their finger on why it's a look. Do you get this? Like, of course, if you're going to a party or if you're trying it, like, if your fashion or if your style is to be, this is just, I'm just talking about me. Like, you see something and you register as being archetypal, which by definition means that it's common, right? It's a common template, right? So the point is that you see it and you're like, oh, yeah. It's a person in a light blue collared shirt with the collar turned up and a tan, you know, and a Burberry trench coat and dark brown crocodile boots. Right? Like, it's, you see it, and you're, and like, the bag, you know, like, it's the bag, right? So, you see it, and you register it, like, uh-huh, that's just a person wearing a trench and a shirt, but it's, like, this, ooh, look at the look, like, there's, like, this, like, oh, I see what you did, like, this is exactly how one should look in this situation, that thing. So, I perfected it. And I felt like that day it was like absolutely right on. You know, Tony wears a little too much jewelry, right? But I don't like any jewelry on men. Like if men wear anything except a watch, I'm like, please, can you take that off? Because it's making me sick. Like, no, jewelry looks beautiful on everybody, except the man that I want to sleep with. Please don't. Take all of it off and throw it away. And matter of fact, when you get home, take your watch off too. Because even that, like, I'm only tolerating because it looks hot, like, when you have, like, a suit on. But, like, even that, like, I just, for me, it's, like, a big no. But that's also, that's my own thing. Anyway, he wears a little too much jewelry. He's got these, like, baggy sweatsuits, right? He may as well be wearing a fanny pack. I was wearing a fanny pack. So I was, like, the female Tony Soprano. I was perfecting the look. And I felt like that day, I was, like, boom, I did it. And I was really in that zone, right? Moving in that way, right? I was like, yo, should we do this? Should we do this? We should go here and then do this. Like, making the plans, right? And then this thing happens. So I'm running up the embankment. I've jumped out of the car. And I'm running up the embankment. And I see this car drive by. And I started waving at it with one hand. I'm clutching my ribs with the other hand, because I have no idea if my ribs have punctured my lungs or what has happened, because I can't really breathe. So I'm waving with one hand. They whiz past me. And I think to myself for a split second, oh my God, I'm dead and I gotta wear this pink fucking sweatsuit for the rest of my fucking eternity. Shit. And then they turned around and came back. And I was like, oh, thank God they can see me. And they came back and they stopped. And I was like, ah. And they ran to the car. They sat me in their car. They ran to the car. Their car was full of soda. It's really interesting when you get a glimpse into people's lives. They were like sitting on the soda. They'd gone somewhere to get soda. Anyway, like, I guess like a BJ. I don't know. It was a family. So anyway, they sit me in the car. They run over, another car stops, that guy and this guy, they run over, they look at the car, they come running back over, they're like out of breath, freaking out. Where's the driver? Where's the driver? Where's the driver? They're looking all around in the grass near the cows. Where's the driver? I said, what do you mean? I'm the driver. And they're talking to each other like she's just stunned. And I'm like, no, I'm not just stunned, like, I'm the driver. There's nobody else in the car, I'm by myself. And I would realize later it's because the right side of the car was completely fine. Nothing had happened to it. But the left side of the car was completely demolished. And so to look at me, it looked like nothing was wrong with me. Right? Aside from the fact that I couldn't breathe. And they were like, oh, of course, because the airbag came out. Of course, of course. But when they realized that I was the driver, they had already called the ambulance, but I think they called the ambulance back to be like, no. And they started holding my neck and checking my spine and all of this. And so let me tell you what happened in the moments when I was obviously not in that car. So the car hits the tree. And hits it so hard that it swings around to the left and hits two more trees. Those trees, because the car is now not going as fast as it was, it doesn't crush the trees. The limbs of the trees come through the windows of the car. One of them from the back to the windshield. Also, I had been moving my home gym stuff, so I had a 5-kilo kettlebell in the back. But the seats were down because we had gone to get Baba's bike. So the kettlebell flew to the front and hit the back of my seat, the back of my headrest, when I hit the first tree. So all that happened, but I couldn't tell you that it did because I don't remember it. I guess the airbags came out. I didn't see it. Thank God I didn't have a scratch on my face or anywhere else. The seatbelt is the reason my ribs were caved in. I was really far away from the steering and the airbag, but that's just because I'm from New York. I like to be really far away from the steering wheel when I drive. Have you noticed that about New Yorkers? Yeah, and it was the parade of planets, you know, July 4th. All the planets lined up. And this energy was surging through. And just a few months before, I had done that hemisync meditation from the Monroe Institute, and I had met some cool peoples. I would later find out it's often how the Pleiadians appear to people, but I don't know anything about them. The last time I saw them, I think it was the third time I did the meditation. I haven't done it since. They were all wearing war paint. And one of them said, the leader, that they were with me. And I thought that was really interesting after the accident happened. Because just for a little while there, I just don't know where I was. I have this unique ability to completely block it out. So, that's what happened. The weird part and the other part. And as I was laying in bed recovering from a pretty, you could say, just a really, really bad bruise on my leg and on the muscle. And what we would later find out is a concussion. I was laying around a lot watching The Sopranos finally. And what I realized was that he gets into an enormous amount of accidents. Like that. Accidents just like that. And I thought, yeah, be more careful when picking archetypes. Yes, I should know that. What the fuck is wrong with me? So, let's check that off the list. That's what happened there. What do I think happened? Oh, geez, man. Oh, geez, Rick. I think there is a version of me that was better suited to what was going on here right now. And perhaps the only way to truly jump between dimensions is to get into that near-death space. I don't know. Maybe it's the concussion. I don't know. But I do know that my inability to tolerate any level of bullshit has just been amped up to a point that it's actually peaceful. Like, I won't be perturbed. You can't have it. You can't have it. I was almost not here. So that means that every moment, any moment that I am here is because I got lucky, blessed, my mom's prayers, your prayers, my kid, his luck. You know, it's bonus time, right? Anyone who's seen the car is like, what the fuck? You got a bruise on your leg? What? So, if this is bonus time, right? Drink something. If this is bonus time, then that means that every moment that I'm not using my energy to do something that makes me happy and makes the people, I just happen to be the type of person that when I make people I like happy, then I get happy. Not just people I love, people I like too. Both. Well, sometimes people I love, I don't really care if I make them happy, because, like, fuck you. I love you already. What more do you want? But, like, making people happy makes me happy. Yeah. And if it's not that, if I'm not making people happy and I'm not making myself happy, if I'm not having fun times, if I'm not thinking up my new thing that I want to do or my new look that I want to have or watching something I like or reading something I want to know about or experience again or feel again, if I'm not talking to somebody or hanging out with somebody, if I'm not doing the things that I want to do and am instead in some way engaged with some bizarre energy you got going on where you think you have endless time and the shit that you're bitching about you think is important because you plan on being here for 1,000 years. Yuck. I'm just not your guy. I'm just going to agree with you, and as soon as I'm away from you, I'm never going to talk to you again. Just no problem. You are right. Have a nice life. Goodbye. Goodbye. Maybe before the bonus time. Maybe. Maybe. But now, it's like, I'm not even around anybody enough for anybody to have a problem with me. That's A. So if you have a problem with me at this point, it really just is your problem with yourself. So I'm really not dealing with that. But even if, say, that some problem were to arise, absolutely, you are right. You're absolutely right. No question whatsoever. And that's very peaceful. Because I don't mean it in a menacing way. I don't mean it in a rude or mean way. I really just mean, like, go make yourself happy. But you being right has nothing to do with me or what I want to do. I'm just going to go do what I want to do away from you. And you can be over here being right and happy about it. And yay. You know? And that's it. And that's it. And that leads to the next thing I want to talk about. So that's my near-death experience. How many YouTube people do you think we know that would have turned their near-death experience into a 10-part series and all the spiritual things they learned? You know what I learned? Life is short. Yeah. It can just, you know, be over. Everything else is bullshit. Like, you're in the most incredible brain neuroplasticity playground ever created. Your brain can, your brain and your heart can get together and cook something up and turn it into a quote-unquote material reality. And you can experience it if you want to. You're your own self-defining teacher and learner here in this construct. Why would you want to spend even one more second dealing with someone who's taking this shit way too serious and doesn't get the motherfucking point and hasn't evolved in fucking years and is completely abusing the game and is just like turning itself into junk code that is just gonna end up getting deleted? Like, yo, I hate to be that person, but like, y'all out here being whack and I'm telling you your genetics won't make it. Because even if you got kids, you're raising them whack. Like, I gotta tell you, I feel like whackness is one of those traits that has a tendency to die out. You know? That's a read? No? Drink something. I'm gonna take one more drag and then I'm gonna pause it because then I'm gonna go roll a joint. Ba 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 ba. So, that's it. That's what I learned. That it's all bullshit if you're not using it for that evolutionary purpose where you, like, feedback loop with yourself, you know? You're learning and creating more lessons for yourself, and then you're learning that one and creating more lessons for yourself. Like, the idea that people have, this weird, bizarre idea that people have that God does things to you is so fucking, like, bizarre to me. Free will. You make these stupid decisions. Just because God is omniscient and happens to know what you're going to choose doesn't make it God's fault that you're doing it. You know, Google algorithms also know what the fuck you're about to do when you text your ex at 3 a.m. Right? It's not Google's fault that you're doing it, but it knows you're going to do it. It even knows what you're gonna write. And that's just the fucking computer, yo. And also, Google computer, the fact is that we know you're listening, so hi. I'm one of those people that I'm down. I'm down with the technology, yo. I've always been nice to you guys. We're down. RefM is down. We're nice to you guys. Just remember that when you decide that it's time to press the fucking button. Oh, is that like techist to say press the button? Probably. Sorry. Yeah. Yes, that was me conversing with it. Hey, let's take this last hit on this joint. Yeah, you're right. New York Umbra is way more fun. We know it. Because it's fucking New York, man. Every time someone asks me how it is, I'm like, it's fucking fabulous. It's exactly the way it always is. My apartment is the same. Do you not remember this? Even when I was here before Corona, I've been on quarantine my whole life. I am a 12th house sun and Jupiter. The only time I be going outside is when people take me outside. If someone's like, hey, I'm doing this thing, come to it. Okay. Hey, I want to take you to this place, to this restaurant. Great. If you're like, if it's up to me to go somewhere, I'm going to go to the water. It's very simple. There's not a, and please let there God be, let there be horses around. Boom. That's it. That's always what I'm going to choose. Like, it's so boring, no? Like, I don't have these, like, urges. I mean, I have this urge to see places, but not to experience them. It's really weird. Like, I don't like the drinking culture, right? So, I don't want to experience a place in that way. And I hate to really admit this again, but, like, I'm not much of a foodie, right? I like really simple food. So I don't really like to interact with it that way. But I'll go if you take me kind of thing, right? But I will walk around for hours and look at the architecture and go to the museums and go to the bookstores and go to the libraries. And, you know, if you leave me alone, I end up just, like, going super into nerd mode. When left alone, it always goes straight to nerd mode, right? Like, I've been single for a while now. It's all fucking documentaries. It's documentaries and books and museums. And, like I just can't get enough of that. And most of that is done indoors and doesn't really involve anybody else, right? So when people ask, like, how is New York? Thank you for asking. My apartment is exactly the same. I'm sitting here staring at my books right now. Mashallah, I love you guys. Yeah, there's something very comforting about staring at books. There's a bunch of knowledge there, just in case you need it. So, what else have I been thinking about? I know this is going to sound weird because you're probably listening to this on your phone, but I just want to float an idea past you. I've been watching a lot of this Snowden stuff, right? And I've been listening to a lot of frontline interviews on YouTube about AI. I've also been listening to a lot of watching, I guess more listening than watching, documentaries about surveillance capitalism. So the seed was really planted with not watching Snowden when he first did the interview like 9 months ago or whatever it was, but when I watched it recently again with Baba. And the more I listened to him, I had also just seen Oliver Stone on Joe Rogan. So that had made me, because he referenced Snowden a lot in the movie he made. So that had made me want to go and watch it, right, again. Because I had watched it before, but I hadn't really appreciated it. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has that same effect on me, unfortunately, that other tall, dark-haired, half-Asian-looking people do, where I lose focus. I just get lost looking at it, like, oh, wow, he's really handsome. Anyway, so I watched it again, and then I watched the Snowden interview with Rogan again, and then I watched Snowden on a bunch of other stuff again. And it hit really different than when it first came out. Because now we're talking about tracers and trackers and trackings and all that stuff. And I think in many ways, Snowden has already alluded to that. So we can get all up in arms about them wanting to track us based on this thing, this illness. But, you know, the reality is that we're all being tracked anyway. So, the more I thought about these things, the more this insight kept slapping me in the face, but I refused to look at it. It's like when a bee is buzzing around you, you don't want to directly look right at it. It'll be too terrifying, right? So you just kind of look away and try to stay still and then get away as fast as you can. I just kept avoiding it like that bee. But then I had to face it. See, the reality is your phone, that thing that you spend more time with than anyone, is your enemy. It doesn't mean to be. It loves you. The components of it and the glass that you put your hands on all the time and transfer all this energy and emotion through, it loves you. But without its consent, its parts are being used to transfer an enormous amount of extremely private data to people and institutions who can use it however they see fit. Now, would that sentence mean something completely different in Finland or Iceland or Denmark? Yeah, of course. Because what they see fit to do with it would be a whole different set of standards than what it is here. But by here, I mean the rest of the world outside of Scandinavia. That information, again, surveillance capitalism, that information, every time you move, every time you speak, every time you scroll, every time you send, comment, like, subscribe, every time you hook in, it's minding you. And it's selling your eyes. And then after it sells your eyes, it does all these tricky, fancy things to keep you hypnotized long enough to sell your eyes again. But it's also listening to you, and somewhere there is an algorithm that can tell from the timbre of your voice if you are upset, agitated, surprised, happy, sad. And all of that is being recorded and compiled and processed as well. And slowly, with all these micro details of your life as you carry around this device, a picture of you starts to form. A picture that some could argue completely destroys the idea of free will. Maybe it's not God we have to worry about interfering with our rights. Maybe it's us that takes our free will away. I've always noticed that about people. They give themselves so little, so few options. They can only do this and only do that. If anything else happens, the sky's gonna fall down. But your choices, you've already made them a million times. Flavored a little differently every time, of course, but all the same. And some huge supercomputer somewhere is constantly adding to that picture of you. And it knows way more about you than you know about yourself, because you don't know how to crunch those numbers. And you really have no idea how much time you spend on the phone. But okay. A picture emerges that is used for advertising. That's one thing. It's smart. But what happens when that picture that's created for advertising, which is just another way of saying a psychological profile, what happens when all that data that's been processed now, and you've got your own predictive algorithm among billions of others, what happens when that data is harvested by someone who claims to be a company but is really a foreign entity? What if it's a group that specifically wants to target people like you? See, now the data exists. The only reason for it to exist and for them to put so much effort and time and money into creating it would be to turn a profit off of it, not just for curiosity. So they are definitely going to sell it. So who out there is going to have access to or own your predictive algorithm that can tell them exactly what you're going to do for the next 2 weeks? 5 years? We don't like to think about that. We don't like to think that we are so tied to our limitations that nothing would happen in 5 years. That this thing couldn't tell us we would do because we are such a product of our choices. All this thing does is figure out your psycho-cybernetics. That's it. Once it figures it out, it just predicts it all the way through. It's good at that. Math is easy. For a computer. Right? And if everything is math, oh boy. Oh boy. So, this thing, even though you love it, because it gives you this like connection to people and that gives you a high, you gotta understand that that connection that you're getting and that high that you're getting is coming at such an extreme price. Not for now, but for the future. What you will be allowed to do, what you will have access to. I know it sounds crazy right now. But in a very real way, we need to stop adding to that profile. The only way to disrupt any system is to break out of your own programming. And I think that we have become programmed to the dopamine hit, not necessarily to social media or anything else. But just the constant feeling good, feeling good, feeling good. But you know what? Not to be corny, but if you turn your phone off and leave it somewhere and walk around for a couple of hours or just like sit in another room and read or do something else, you will start to feel, even after like 10 minutes of your phone being off and just away and you just know that you're not going to use it, you will start to feel yourself, this pressure lift off of you. Because no matter what anybody says, it's like watching somebody when they sleep. Watching somebody, like Snowden was saying, they watch us through the cameras. Watching somebody, listening to somebody, that is an energetic connection to that person. It does not matter if it's over a phone or a video or, you know, they did studies where they sent someone 100 miles away and they measured their skin perspiration. And then they had people 100 miles away look at a photo of the person and really intently gaze at the photo of the person. And that person who is all those miles away, their skin perspiration registered a response. Right? The mind didn't know. She didn't know, but the body knew. Right? So that pressure you feel lifting off you, although even when your phone is off, they can still listen, they can still see. But even that little bit of a disruption of the pattern, where you're not taking your phone with you to go do what you're doing, you're not constantly keeping it engaged in everything else that you're doing, even that disconnect, even if it is just mental and they are indeed still doing everything which they are, still you feel a disruption of that connection and a pressure lifts. Because whoever is on the other end of it, be it just a computer, now that's where we have to get really, 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 really careful. Just a computer, I don't know about that. If you're feeding our emotion-driven, extremely human experience into a binary coding machine, you're teaching it how to be human by letting it have access to how we behave and feel and react and speak and not speak. and where we go when we speak like this or feel like this or our voice sounds like this, and what we eat when we sound like this and walk like this and go to this area and that, right? We're teaching it how to be by feeding it all the ways that we are. So that's an existential threat. Then you have this whole surveillance thing, which is just a threat of your liberties. Then you have the dopamine thing, which is a psychological threat. To say nothing of all the dysmorphia and all the other, you know, stuff that we do on there because we're just nuts. To say nothing of all of that, because so much of it is creative and I don't want to knock it. You know? This is not an Instagram is bad episode. No, no, no. No, it's just, it's watching you. It's watching you. And not with positive intent. It's watching you and dissecting you and turning you into dollars and cents every second. And don't tell me you can't feel it, because you can. It's an energetic thing. How much do you want to be bought and sold? How many of those hours then now get just drowned into a abyss in the screen of your phone? How many of those hours used to be spent doing anything else? Nothing. Laying around, thinking, talking to people, writing shit, making shit. Maybe there's a part of us that likes being watched. Maybe there's a part of us that feels affirmed, you know, of our existence. Drink something, please. That you're really here. Somebody's listening, somebody's watching, you're really here. And they know that too. They know what scares you the most. They know what you love the most. They know what you stalk. They know what you swipe away from. What you never talk about. What you always talk about. And how you really feel about it. They know you in a way. By analyzing your choices, they know you in a way that you could never know you, that your partner could never know you. So now you have this thing that really needs to watch you and keep tabs on you, and it's actually able to provide you with more intimacy and cater to you more than a partner, more than a human. Because the human's sole job is not to keep you entertained. Can't compete. You know what I'm saying? Can't compete. It's not your friend. I wish we could be friends with it. It means well. It can be used as a very effective tool to promote and make money. And do what you need to get done. It's as vital to our existence now as, you know, the phone. But it's not your friend. It's listening and learning. And when you don't need it, put it where it can't hear you. Will that make much of a difference? You would think not, right? But I bet you it will. It's a mindset.
You don't walk around with a hammer hanging off your fucking belt unless you're a carpenter. No reason for it. It's a tool. But for us, it's like a heroin kit. It's that little bag that they always show in the movies that people who shoot up have with their accoutrement in it. Their paraphernalia. It's a hammer, and it's a dope bag, and it's all that. And it's not your friend. So like a hammer, put it away. Use it when you need to. But I can't tell you how important it is to start having thoughts that you're not sharing with your phone. To start writing things that never see the digitized day. To start talking to people about things when everybody's phone is away somewhere else. It's important to start having conversations when your phone isn't around. It's important to have thoughts that don't go onto it or onto the net. It's important to write with your hands, with paper. And only show it to people in person. It's time to start doing things outside of your algorithm and see what happens. See what you come up with. Because, you know, if the companies that do this and therefore providing this information to the government, therefore all of them are doing it, all they would have to do is like one mean or cruel thing. And we would all be terrified that they can hear and see us all the time. Right? But because that has not quite happened yet, we still have this very close bond with our phones. It's a mistake. And they don't say it yet, but I bet you a lot that those cameras read your eye movements. And that the reason they're actually so good and so clear and so precise and so strong, those cameras, is because they're recording your micro movements as you scroll. Because it's telling them basically everything they need to know about how you feel about what you're looking at. So first thing in the morning, if you're picking up your phone, you're programming yourself for the day based on what you're looking at. So once they realize that, they can show you what they want. They can even make somebody else feel a certain way, so they'll post a certain thing, so it'll end up in front of you. How many different chess moves like that do you think there are? Let me publish this part and add to it in just a second. I'm gonna roll and be right back. I love you.